This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hulu. Based on shocking true events, the new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, tells the story of a savage murder in a small town. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
Hi, I'm Kurt from San Diego.
Hi, I'm Rainbow from Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi, I'm Dominic from Atlanta, Georgia.
The Sound of Young America is an independent production supported by listeners like you and me.
If you'd like to donate to support the show,
visit MaximumFun.org and click on Donate.
I'm Jesse Thorne. Live on tape from my house in Los Angeles, it's The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio International. Before we talk to Thomas Lennon, Kerry Kenny, and Ken Marino of The State, here's a clip from the show. Michael Ian Black plays a man waking up from a coma, and Ken Marino, his doctor.
He's waking up, doctor.
Relax, Jerry. Don't try to get up just yet. You've been in an accident. Do you remember?
Well, I remember I was changing the papers on the Xerox machine, and I stood up, and then I hit my head on the file cabinet.
Yes, Jerry, and you've been in a bit of a coma ever since.
How long?
Well, prepare yourself, Jerry. You've been asleep for 119... well, almost 2 hours.
Oh, is my wife here?
Yes, but...
Jerry, we heard you were waking up. We came straight over from the apartment.
What apartment?
Ours.
We don't have an apartment.
Well, I had to sell the house, Jerry. It just held too many memories. I live in an apartment now with my new husband, Dan.
Hey, husband? You remarried?
How long was I supposed to wait for you, John?
Jerry.
Whatever. I've moved on with my life now. Oh, which reminds me, your parents are dead.
After tedious and painful therapy, you should regain partial use of your limbs.
How soon can I return to work?
Oh, Jerry. You don't have a job anymore. Computer programming has sort of been phased out.
Phased out?
Yes, we don't use computers anymore, Jerry, now that we can all read minds.
Some of us had to keep evolving while you got to sleep, Jerry.
And without telepathy, we wouldn't be able to communicate with the Martians that now rule our planet. Jerry, your coma stretched across one of the most eventful early afternoons in history. But with hard work, therapy, and drugs, I bet you can readjust yourself.
It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests on the program are three of the members of the sketch comedy group The State. They started at the end of the 1980s at New York University, rocketed to semi-fame on the music television network.
Basic rocketed cable, wow. Minor celebrity.
To semi-fame. That's like a rocket making it about 100 feet up.
It was exactly. It was one of those rockets that they put a Russian chimp in and it burned to death. Like, it burned to death on the launch pad.
Like, this time we're doing it.
Yeah, what they had is like 1,000 Russian school children watching a monkey burn to death on a launch pad. That's what we were. That's the state.
It's Tom Lennon, Kerry, Kenny Silver, and Ken Marino. Welcome to The Sound of Young America. It's great to have you guys on here.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be back.
So the show is not called The Mounds of Fudge America.
No, that's just a vulgar pun that you, created.
I just misread the facts.
Oh, maybe we have that later today.
Oh, okay.
You still get faxes?
I only am working on facts these days.
I send a huge... I do everything with facts.
I've been faxing out Twitters.
You are grunge.
Oh.
Instead of Twittering, I just fax everyone I know with a fax number.
I bet we need to talk to you about that. My fax, that's a lot. It's expensive, all the paper.
It's a fleet.
I don't need to know by fax that you just brushed your teeth.
Well, I'm fleeting these days, and I like it. Jesse, thanks for having us back. It is Jesse, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's a pleasure to have you guys on the show. Of course, since this state, the three of you, have, along with the other members of the state, have had many other projects. Most recently... Ken Marino has been a featured player, the star even of...
Wait a minute. I know what you're getting. Actually, most recently, my most recent project was I just cleaned out all the DVDs in my closet.
Mm.
Right.
That was more recent than...
That was like an hour ago. Unless this thing that you're going to say about Ken was...
I don't know what he's going to say.
Let's find out.
Okay, go ahead. Let's hear.
Because it was about me mostly.
Let's hear. Okay.
I was going to mention the Starz sitcom Party Down.
Oh, thank you.
A very funny show. Of course, Tom Lennon and Carrie Kenny.
I think
you
I was asked to
from...
do one of those stars, and I either forgot about it or I passed.
Right.
Not that I did. I meant to do it, but I think I forgot.
Jeez.
Right.
No, I literally forgot. I think they forgot that they wanted me to do it.
Party Down?
You guys forgot, yeah.
Which part?
I don't know. Somebody called
Probably
and said, hey,
part.
You want to do it? And I said, yeah. And then they never called back.
Well, it wasn't me. I had no power over on that show.
And Carrie
Kenny? Why didn't you want him to be on the show, Ken?
It's Machiavellian. It's like the state all over again.
It's a competition.
Sexual.
Really.
Sexual tension.
Everything we do is a sexual competition, especially the sex competitions.
Carrie, this is something that has nothing to do with the state, but I was astonished to read on the internet that your father voiced Lion-O. Is that actually true?
This is very true. My father was the voice of Lion-O, Lord of the Thundercats, 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 ho. My father currently and has always been the voice of the Cocoa Puffs bird and Count Chocula.
The one who says cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs?
He's also the voice on all the state DVDs when it says something that happened. And now back to the startling, whatever it is.
Previously on the state.
Previously on the stapes. We always would use Larry at the very beginning of the show.
Larry Kennedy.
Larry is actually the
Kevin
voice.
Kevin Albuquerque.
Almost any time there's a voice that's not one of us, it's Larry Kennedy on the state.
Free.
Always.
I want to ask you about that. I was counting backwards in my mind because I was when that show was on the air was about the time when I was in its key demographic. I remember playing in the playground Thundercats. You've got maybe 10 years or so on me, which would put you right in the demographic.
That would put you right in the demographic
to be like a teenager when that was going on.
You know,
and I wonder what it's like when you're a teenager and your dad is Lion-O on Thundercats, whether that's something you're proud of or not.
I was getting laid left and right. I was a girl. You have to put that into the pot.
Scenario.
Because it wasn't a big show with girls.
Well, it wasn't a big show with 16-year-olds, I would hope.
Not with 16-year-olds, and especially not with girls. But certainly now, the cool factor... You know, it's like the retro cool factor.
Mm-hmm. Is that one of those shows that was sort of promoting the gay agenda?
Well, I don't think they intended it.
Yeah, but it was.
It was.
Just like the village people.
Just
but
like
we didn't
were.
Know.
Just like I believe the state was.
Possibly the coolest thing my dad ever did that I'm the most proud of is he was the host of a little television program called Bowling for Dollars.
Ken, let's talk a little bit about this state. What are your first memories of Tom and Carrie?
My first memories of Tom and Carrie on the state.
You were a volatile guy during the state years.
I was drinking a lot. I don't remember.
But you were really volatile.
We met when we were 17.
I was going to say you were new to college when you met.
I was new to college actually. I was Tom originally when the state was formed. Tom, you were not a member.
I was
of the
not
original
a member. Of
the, member
I came in a year late.
And I remember you. One of the first things you came in and pitched was a fantasy isthmus.
It was a sketch. It was a parody of Fantasy Island isthmus. Called The Dream Isthmus.
Yeah.
Where you were allowed to enact, you could live out reasonably priced fantasies that were sort of workaday fantasies that weren't a big production.
It wasn't Fantasy Island. It
Why
was
didn't
fantasy.
We ever do that? That's a
I
great
remember
sketch.
The vitriol with which the rest of the group looked at me, the hatred. When I read that, it was the first sketch ever. I don't really know why I ever wrote another sketch.
I didn't know what
sketch.
The word meant.
Right.
So it was my anger at myself.
Oh, you were
I
really.
Think it's because you were wearing a bow tie and cowboy boots.
That too. We used to... Something you should know about the state is that we... Like, I can't overstate how seriously we took what we were doing. Ken once put his fist through a wall during a meeting of the state when Mike Black and and Ben Grant were going to go on the road. They were going to take a little time off from the group to be Ninja Turtles.
I don't remember that.
It was a big
deal.
He
put his fist
like
through
when you
a
say,
wall.
When you say going on the road to be Ninja
okay, maybe
Turtles,
through a chair
you mean
a
like
you don't
when,
remember
the,
that?
Like
when
appearing...
the Ninja Turtles had a music act
no, oh,
and
honey,
they would go
no.
to malls?
No.
They were the advanced team.
They were appearing at like bowling alleys.
And children's hospitals. They did a lot of good work.
This was like the national tour. Yeah. They would show up before like the skating Ninja Turtles showed up and did like the big
ice skating Ninja Turtles.
Mm-hmm. So they would come and they would do interviews on local television, bowling alleys, car dealerships, right?
And you were unhappy about that?
Well, they were going to leave.
They quit college. Well, quit college, and then in doing that, they were quitting the group. Because
which made, yeah.
I was upset about it.
And
I like the group.
In fairness,
like
we all took the group that seriously.
We never thought it would end, ever, ever, ever. It was like the notion that your parents were going to die. It was like, that's not going to happen. That can't happen.
How was that tone set? How did it get to the point where, because that's not what most college comedy groups are like.
What are they like?
They're just goofing around. It's a lot
we
of
were not
around.
Goofing around. We were certainly goofing around on our off time, but we certainly took the work and the sketch writing. Mm-hmm. It was so competitive and so cutthroat. I mean, it's the reason the material is still good, is because we literally never let anybody slide on anything in the group ever.
We loved it. We were together every minute. We loved it. Yeah.
So at what point when you were in college did you decide that this was going to be more than your college club?
Always. We never thought otherwise. We thought we were going to rule the world of comedy.
Did you see a path to it?
The weird thing is, like, when you are the age that we got together, we were so naive and so...
Tom and I met at 16.
Carrie and I have been friends since we were 16 years old. But, we weren't cynical at all, and we legitimately thought, that we were the next Monty Python, I think, in our heads.
I enjoyed what we were doing, and it made me feel like I was actually doing something at college, because I didn't like the other, like, classes I was taking so much. So I enjoyed...
You didn't like college, is essentially what you're
saying.
No,
I liked the college environment. I liked living in Manhattan, but there were certain courses that I didn't like. So what was great about the state is I actually felt like I was doing work and I was learning something, and it was like school for me, as far as the education of learning about comedy and writing comedy. And so
I don't know if people know, we were together years before the television show.
Yeah.
By the time the TV show came along, we'd been together for I'd been in the group for since 89. I came in a year late, but everybody else had been together the year before.
The first season of the television show was 93.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we'd been together and we'd already done You Wrote It, You Watch It the year before too. So we had done hundreds of live shows, not hundreds, but a really substantial amount of live shows.
40s of live shows.
40s. But I mean, we would open for bands, and we were relentless. We would get together like... All of our free time was devoted to the state. We would meet at night and pitch each other material.
Skip classes. Yeah. That made for some free time.
We would take any gig that anybody ever offered us.
We performed in bars all the time.
We did the Strawberry Festival.
We performed the Strawberry Festival, and we performed on the basketball court, the Violet NYU Violets basketball court.
While there was a game happening on the other court.
Not a joke. While there was a game happening on the other court.
Hindsight being 2020, I think that was a mistake.
We played some bad venues. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned You Wrote It, You Watch It. I thought it was called You Wrote It, You Watch It. Did I get that right? This was a television program hosted by Mr. Jon Stewart on the Music Television Network, where people made videos themselves with the then nascent home camcorder technology and sent them into MTV and they aired them.
Not really.
No?
The conceit was that people would write letters to MTV to say, this crazy thing happened to me and here's what it was. And then this team of professional comedians would reenact them. And so,
but what we brought to it actually, and I think it was David.
We went out and interviewed
we interviewed people. We said we pitched it, right?
We had pitched MTV so many times. David Wayne was interning at MTV. We had pitched MTV, I think, at least two or three times. Will you please give us a sketch show? They flatly refused us over and over again.
And
had no interest in that.
We had no experience.
Yeah.
And so we did what we did is the man on the street kind of interviewed people and asked them what was basically what people were writing in these they're writing in these letters about most embarrassing parent story or whatever, and what we pitched was we'll go out and actually interview people on the street and intercut it with that, and that was our contribution to You Wrote It, You Watch It. And
from that it got us the state, and it got Jon Stewart the Jon Stewart show, the original Jon Stewart show on MTV.
So you're saying you got Jon Stewart the Jon Stewart show,
or vice versa,
and
it's
got
entirely
me
possible
a Nobel
he got us
Peace
the
Prize
state.
Nomination.
Congratulations.
Sandra Oh took that one also.
It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are Thomas Lennon, Kerry Kenny, and Ken Marino of the influential comedy group The State, which is now on DVD. Here's something from a comedy record the state made after their television show was canceled called Comedy for Gracious Living. It was deemed too strange to be released by their record company.
Hey! Hey, Bob, glad you're finally out of the hospital.
Your new glass eyes look terrific.
Thanks.
Good to have you back, Bob.
Hey, we bought you some flowers.
Oh, no. I'm allergic to roses.
One thing you could always say about Bob, he always had a lot of eyes.
Now he doesn't have any eyes.
No, no.
Guess I can keep those roses now.
You can hear us?
Well, yeah, I didn't lose my hearing.
What about now?
Do you guys want to go get
salmon?
I
can still hear you now. Salmon, sure. I'm not allergic to that.
Just let me get my balls out of this book.
Let's go have a drink.
When you first started producing material and you first started working with MTV on the TV show, what kind of reactions did you get from the people at MTV? What did they think of what you were doing?
I don't know if they knew we were there.
We were very low on the radar, certainly. And when we did get notes, you know, the very first season we got a couple notes, which were they would have preferred our material to in some way address the MTV audience, which we just didn't do at all.
Well, they did the four things they needed. They wanted
sick and twisted,
right. Musical parody,
right?
Or MTV parody,
right? Topical.
Right.
Social.
Sick and Twisted.
Yeah,
Sick and Twisted. Sick and Twisted. MTV parody.
They love parodies.
Recurring characters. They definitely want a recurring character. And there was one other thing. And of course, we were like, we don't want to do any of that shit.
And we basically didn't.
Which I think, honestly, to our credit years later, I honestly think that's what makes it watchable now, because we weren't doing sketches or trying not to do.
I mean, the one parody we did was MTV Sports. For some reason, we parodied Dan Cortez.
We did. If you look at the first couple of seasons, we do. It's heavier in that. We do like a Cindy Crawford thing.
We got away from it though.
And Flea and Slash.
I got Fleas in the house. Yeah.
And then once they started to, like, after we got picked up for the second season and the third season, they kind of really kind of forgot about us let us do our thing.
You did a noteworthy character that was essentially a parody of all of those ideas, a guy who was built exclusively around a catchphrase.
That was a reaction to the notes that first season, which
was us giving them the finger, basically.
I don't know why we were so, you know, adamant or angry about, like, drawing a line in the sand, but we were, and we just didn't want to do recurring characters, and then they insisted, and so what we planned on doing was Louie, the I Want to Dip My Balls in It guy.
Who held ping pong balls. He was talking about ping pong balls.
That was the standards and practice.
That's how we do standards. Yeah.
Right. Well, it also applies to our program, so I want to clarify that he was talking about the ping pong balls.
But as he walks in the room, then the announcer, a.k.a. Larry Kenny, would say, Louis, the guy who comes in and says his catchphrase over and over again.
And we designed one of the first shows where the whole show was leading up to a recurring character that you've never seen before, and our plan was to never see him again. Like, Iggy Pop talked about, like, this wonderful recurring character, and then we did it, and then, of course, MTV was like, oh, that's terrific, do another one, or something like that. And so we same with Doug. Like,
we eventually wound up doing recurring characters.
Yeah. And people did like the recurring characters a lot, but I think we felt like we had won in a way by saying, like, all right, we'll do them, but we're going to do them our own way.
Here's a bit of that sketch with Louie, and let's be clear, he's talking about ping pong balls he's holding in his hands.
And now, Louie, the guy who comes in and says his catchphrase over and over again.
Hi, everybody, it's Louie. He's coming down the wall.
Hey, everybody!
Hey, Louie!
Who's got something to drink?
I do.
What is it?
It's orange juice.
Orange juice? Hey, I want to dip my balls in it! Yeah! Who's got a bowl or something?
I do.
What's in it?
Oatmeal.
Oatmeal?
Oatmeal.
Oatmeal?
Oatmeal!
I want to dip my balls in it!
Mayonnaise!
Yeah! I want to put it on my sandwich!
Yeah!
Please say it, Louie.
No! You know what I'm gonna say.
No, we don't.
You know what I'm gonna say?
No, we don't.
You know what I'm gonna say?
No, we don't.
You know what I'm gonna say?
No, we don't. I wanna dip my balls in it.
I was just watching the first season of the show last night and this morning, and one of the things that impressed me, and particularly about a character like Louis, this character who's basically a parody of the idea of having a catchphrase, is that almost every sketch is invested with just a tremendous amount of brio. Just like you really like go to town with every single character, every single idea.
Say what you want about the state, we committed.
We worked.
Even if it's terrible.
So hard.
Even if what we're doing is terrible, you will not see a higher level of commitment from a bunch of people.
One misconception about the state, and I think it might be because of Reno now, but we never did improv. Never, ever, ever. We treated, I guess because we were in college studying theater, we treated our written word like a play, and you memorized it to the if, and, or but. And so
we rehearsed so hard,
you know, beats and moments, and, you know, we were theater school nerds.
We definitely, what you know, if, sometimes we tried to mask maybe a skit that was a B
or a B minus
with a lot of volume.
Enthusiasm.
I know I did, and I think I calmed down a little bit in the later season.
How did you? I read an article from the New York Times from the mid 1990s, a feature about the state that ran in the Times. And one of the things that struck me was they were very insistent that you were very insistent that you were making all of your decisions together.
Yeah,
yeah.
Took a lot of time,
which is amazing, given again that there were 10 or 11 of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
and it's true.
How did you do that?
Again, it's the reason that the material, I think, holds true and is still funny and could be released now and hold up, is because, I mean, it was just like something that was filtered over and over again. And I don't mean filtered like done by a committee, but I mean it was...
We were the committee.
It was
no,
I mean, everyone
writers.
Attacked every piece until there was... The only things that got through that many people were the things that were completely new and totally weird and totally original. And if it wasn't pretty interesting and pretty weird, it just would not make the show.
We were not
lazy. I mean,
lazy.
It really didn't. There's not very many ordinary sketches on the show.
I think that the mind that approach came about because of Todd, which was Todd Hollebeck was in a sketch comedy group called the Sterile Yak, and he broke away from it because he didn't like the hierarchy of it. I think that's
exactly right.
And then
yeah.
And so he wanted to start his own group.
There was more of a collective,
which was everybody had an equal say. And that group became the new group, and that's what we were called through college. And that's how we approached it. That was kind of a precedent that Todd started. And then we never let go throughout us working together. And you know, as we got older, or as the group got older, you know, it became hard because disagreements tended to kind of stretch everything out. You know, if you had one person, like, making a call, you can, at a certain point, move on to the next joke. But I remember kind of arguing ad nauseum about certain things. Mm-hmm. So
fighting was the discourse of the group. That was the way that we worked everything out. We would basically, what we would do is every single evening and every weekend from, you know, like say, you know, 6 or 7 till 10 or 11 at night, we would pitch each other material, fight tooth and nail about it, and then when we were done, we'd go to a bar. Mm-hmm. And never take the fights with us.
And write skits on bar
napkins.
Yeah. And we would never, the fighting would never really go with us to whatever we were doing. We were very good at maintaining our friendship despite the fact that we were basically, our full-time job was fighting with each other.
Yeah.
Were you guys writing things that were too silly and weird?
Oh, like Where's the Mousie?
Lard
like
Factory?
Like Slinky Town? Yeah.
Why did I not bring, you know, recently a bunch of the state was over at my house, and I read some sketches that did not make it, like the old Lard Factory. Remember that one?
I don't.
When Lard, that sketch was called When Lard Was King.
I feel like
King.
That was a follow-up. I feel like, was that a follow-up to
Porcupine Racetrack? Kind of. Then there was the Ricky Jones Show, which never made it, which was me and Mike Black going, ooh, it's Ricky Jones. Ooh,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was
yeah.
Mike Jan dancing in a cage.
Yeah.
There was a lot of stuff that didn't, you know, Showalter was working on a sketch called Wine Heist for years about guys in trench coats who end up like having like a sort of, all these weird guys in trench coats with sunglasses, and then they meet on the sheep meadow and like have wine.
I can't remember if it's true or not, but Tom and I wrote a sketch that we ended up using called Froggy Jamboree.
Absolutely.
And I can't remember if it was true that the group didn't like it.
The group did not want to approve it, so we just did it anyway.
We did it anyway, and we did it when it's over the credits. And as we're doing the sketch, you see everyone getting in the vans and leaving for the day, including the boom
and
operator.
And actually take the microphone away.
Hi. Carrie and I wrote a skit called Froggy Jamboree, and the rest of the state didn't like it, and they sort of got sick of us asking to do it. So we said, could we do it under the credits? And they said, you know, do whatever the hell you want to do. So without further ado, the credits and Froggy Jamboree!
When we come back, we'll find out about what life was like for the state after the state. It's The Sound of Young America from PRI Public Radio International.
Production of The Sound of Young America is supported in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered. Online at ask.metafilter.com.
The Sound of Young America and the monsters of podcasting are headed east. We'll be in Philadelphia September 16th and 17th and in New York September 18th and 19th. You can find full information including lineups and ticket details at MaximumFun.org. If you're coming to the show, help pay our way with the purchase of a beautiful commemorative poster. You can pre-order your poster by clicking on any of the dates at MaximumFun.org, and then you can pick it up at the show. We'll see you in Philadelphia and New York, September 16th through 19th. Welcome back to The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guests are Thomas Lennon, Kerry Kenny, and Ken Marino of the influential sketch comedy group The State. They were on MTV in the mid-1990s, and the show is now on DVD. Some of the sketches that were most successful were completely silly. Tom Lennon, one of your signature sketches that you alluded to is this thing called Barry and Levon, where you and Michael Ian Black...
We're just two weird, like, kind of Barry White guys. I don't know what we are. We're like weird white Barry Whites.
And yeah, we're wearing lounge clothes.
We're just very sexy, sexy guys, and... we just have $240 worth of pudding, which is a big pile of pudding. And at the end, we rub our asses in the pudding. But we tease it for a long time leading up to it. We're kind of like just like flirting it and super, it's super sexual. There are a lot of state sketches that I think what's so great about them is that they were written in the time it takes you to type out the words. And
And people loved it immediately.
Once in a while, we just didn't overthink something. We're like, you know what? It's great. Just leave it.
Oh yeah, baby.
It's that time.
All you know is that time.
I'm Levon.
And I'm Barry, Sagittarius.
And it's time. It's time for $240 worth of pudding.
Worth of pudding.
Oh yeah. Mr. Boucher, come on in here. Let's get a shot of this pudding.
Now that is the kind of pudding that only $240 can buy.
Oh yeah. We had the $240.
We had to have the pudding.
Oh yeah.
I want to ask you about my absolute favorite state sketch, which is Porcupine Racetrack.
Tom Lennon.
You know, this is an astonishingly elaborate production number in the style of the race scene in My Fair Lady, mm-hmm. where everyone's wearing these spectacular Edwardian...
It's ding, ding, ding with the trolley.
...outfits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We can play a little bit of it.
It's a marvelous day at the Porcupine Racetrack. We'll watch them little porkies run. The sun, the track, and porcupines.
What a recipe for fun.
Racing form, Mr. Johnson?
Why, thank you, Jimmy. Here, get yourself a licorice whip.
I got a pick for you boys. Oh. This porcupine has to win.
Yeah.
He's strong and fast and ready.
And loaded up with gin.
I'm putting my dough on Lightning, cause it says here he's a sure thing.
And the odds are 5-4.
But boy, I hope that he's not slower. Otherwise, then this here Joe will be back on Skid Row.
No, and the truth is we did spend a lot of money on that piece, and that was the idea.
I must give a lot of credit to Michael Jan on that, because Michael Patrick Jan, who would direct... all of our pieces were directed by either David Wayne or Michael Jan. And
Jan really went bananas on that. Like, certainly, you know, I had always hoped it would be kind of a big production. That, again,
when
Porcupine
you,
Racetrack...
When you yeah. imagined Porcupine Racetrack in your mind...
Porcupine Racetrack was written, I should say this, in the half hour before a pitch meeting, in the time it takes to sing all those words.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't have voted.
And then
I don't think it was changed.
It was never changed. I came in, I sang it exactly like that. Porcupine, Racetrack, Porcupine.
But Teddy Shapiro did an amazing job.
Then Teddy scored it later. Yeah. But the music was written
before. We had
Broadway
dancers, yeah. which we didn't usually have extras. We had Broadway dancers. We had Broadway. We had opera singers.
Oh, and what I say about the network not wanting us to do the sketch was 100% true.
And they
thought it was a totally stupid idea.
And it was a good portion of our budget. Yeah, it's really stupid. I would love to see the full-length musical of that. So, Tom, whenever you have, an hour
it's
and a half.
It's pretty stupid, but so was Terms of Endearment, and that was a great movie.
Yeah.
But it was really stupid.
Yeah, it's a real
God, what
way
a
to
stupid
play.
Movie Terms of Endearment is. It's so stupid.
It's The Sound of Young America. My guests are members of the 1990s sketch comedy group The State, which ran on MTV from 1993 to 1995. After a few years of doing The State on MTV, you started to get entreaties to do it on network television.
Once and for all, let's clarify what happened with The State. Yes. MTV offered us 65 more episodes on the air, guaranteed.
Who would take something like that?
Yeah. You know, we didn't really know that much about that deal at the time. We found out a little bit later. We were very naive and really stupid and made an incredibly, incredibly bad decision to, instead of taking those 65 more episodes on the air, we had an offer for 3 specials on CBS.
In between that was the ABC thing.
Briefly, we were going to do something at ABC.
We went out and had a big, with all these people from William Morris.
I feel like it was in the trades, even, that we were going to do something on ABC.
Yeah, we got a deal with ABC at the time was the number one network, and CBS at the time was the number 4 network. And we left MTV with an offer from ABC. And we thought it was legitimate because, the top people at William Morris took us out, and we smoked cigars and we drank brandy, and we had this like amazing meal. And I don't even know the agents that we met. I never met them prior, and I don't think we ever met them after.
Turns out they didn't exist. They were cyborgs. Total scam.
So there was on the table, there was an ABC deal that was nice, and then that went away.
It got quit. You blew it, Kenny.
We'll find something else. And they found this CBS deal, if I remember correctly, which was you can do three special.
Three tests. It was actually three, remember?
I thought it was one
test. Well,
it was
three if the first one did well.
Right.
Yeah.
So you know a little bit how this story goes.
So we took the bird in the hand and we killed it.
Mm-hmm. And so we did the 43rd and final Halloween special, mm-hmm. which was the only thing in TV Guide, the Halloween special edition of TV Guide, that they didn't advertise.
Yeah.
There was a... The opening of the State CBS special was a song called We're Digging Our Own Graves on CBS.
It was clever.
It was us singing about how no one was going to watch the show, how it was a terrible move for us to be on CBS, how we were digging our own graves.
And they had forgotten that we were even doing the pilot for them to the point where they actually let us do that piece and air it on their network.
It's the Halloween special with something of the We're Digging Our Own Graves. But it was, I mean, it's. I can't tell if it's funny now or really, really not funny.
I think it's kind of sad.
It's actually terribly sad, the harbinger of things to come that was the musical opening number of our CBS special.
Was it sad to do things other than The State when The State was done for good?
That was incredibly touchy because a bunch of us went and did a show that was a spinoff of a State sketch.
This
called
Viva
Variety
on Comedy Central, a very strange show.
A show. I almost thought you were going to say great show, and then there was an incredibly long pause, and he said strange show.
I'm glad you didn't say thank you. That would have been so awkward.
I was ready to say thank you, and then you said strange.
What do you say when somebody says strange show? What's the proper response?
You are.
If you notice, I just kind of waited it out. Let's just wait it out for a
minute. Well, it was a strange show. I'm not passing judgment on it. I enjoyed the show.
Yeah. I would say calling it a strange show is exactly passing judgment on it.
It's like when my grandmother would come see me.
I think
and,
it's
and
not
shows,
self-evident.
She,
this is a show in which you, the two of you, Tom Lennon and Carrie Kenny played European a divorced variety Belgian, show
yeah,
host.
A divorced, yeah. a divorced Belgian couple who had joint custody of their show.
That does sound strange.
Michael Ian Black did a character named Johnny Blue Jeans.
Johnny Blue Jeans.
Yeah. So why is that any different than MASH or Golden Girls?
Right.
It's not a strange show.
But you were explaining that it was touchy.
America was it was very touchy because
within the group, you mean?
Yeah. Oh, it was a horrible, horrible scene because it was based on I'd written a sketch called the Mr. and former Mrs. Le Pen variety program. And we basically wanted to do... It was an incredibly icky scene because, you know, a couple of people of the group basically went to Comedy Central with that as its own show.
There weren't parts for everybody. It was its own kind of thing. And I was so naive during all that thinking that everybody was just happy for everybody. But there's going to be weird feelings about those kind of things.
I wasn't happy about it.
Ken was not happy about it. And why would you be?
But I was sad because, you know, the state...
It meant the state was over, kind of.
It meant the state was over. And so I was in mourning and then
And then someone had sex with the corpse.
And then hearing that, like, a smaller section of the group went out and did something, I was like, wait a second. What happened to the all for one and one for all kind of mentality? But what was...
In fairness, there had been a long time of nothing happening with the state.
Absolutely.
We had a movie deal that fell through. We had a record that fell through. We had a book that came out and was kind of a flop. So.
And everybody had to survive, and everybody had to make money. I mean, we weren't making money. We were barely making money when we were doing the state, and certainly at the end of the state when we were like, you know, we got like a record deal that that never came out, but we recorded it, and a book deal that came out and nobody bought it. We weren't making that much money, and then when that died out, everybody had to get work.
And you know,
and so
the passion that we had never changed. So it was there. I mean, some of the worst nights of my life were the nights that the state was, you know, sort of breaking up and going to do Viva. It was really, really horrible stuff.
The cool thing is on a very bright. I'm sorry. Very bright side. We this year did a state reunion live show in San Francisco for the San Francisco Sketch Fest, and truly, to pull 11 people together on two coasts with children and jobs and families and all that was an amazing feat in itself. And we did all new material, and it was like we had not skipped a beat.
Yeah, it was fun.
We had such an amazing time, and immediately the flurry of emails started of how can we tour, how can we this, how can we this. So
there are discussions of serious state projects.
Yeah.
We've written a ton of material in the last year for the state.
What can you tell us about those discussions?
You know, I don't know. I think we last left it. I think if we were to say right now that we're going on tour, we probably would. Because we last left it with kind of figuring out dates and stuff.
It's kind of a nightmare to try to get everybody. Cause
it's a big group.
It's a big group and, you know, everybody's working on things. And so to try to figure out when we can do something is hard because usually one or two or three or four people are... involved in something else, and so it's hard to get that.
That's the good news.
Together. Yeah,
I mean, we have college professors in our group. We have people who have their own TV shows. You know, I mean, everybody's busy doing really cool stuff.
Well, guys, thank you so much for taking all this time to be on The Sound of Young America. It was so great to have you on the show.
I'm ready to talk for another 3 hours.
I feel like this is awkward now.
Are you telling us we have to leave?
Ken Marino.
Why are you pushing me out the door?
Ken Marino.
Get your hands
Kerry
off me.
Kerry Kenny Silver and Tom Lennon.
Get your hands off me.
Don't manhandle him.
Founding
don't
members.
He used to be somebody.
Call the police. Kerry.
He was a basic cable minor celebrity.
Don't you manhandle him.
The state is now available on digital versatile disc. That's our time for another Sound of Young America program. I have been your host, Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart. The show produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our music provided by Dan Wally. Our editor is Nick White. Our intern, John Kim. You can find us online at MaximumFun.org. And if you have thoughts about the show, you can email me at Jesse, J-E-S-S-E, at MaximumFun.org. We'll see you next time, right here on The Sound of Young America. After The Sound of Young America, we're sharing some promos from some of our pals and PRI colleagues. Hopefully you'll get some new ideas for podcasts to check out.
Clark Boyd here, host of The World's Technology Podcast. For 4.5 years, I've worked in obscurity, overshadowed by the gadget junkies, the fanboys, the uber geeks, You see, people hate my podcast because, well, I don't talk about iPhones or any other sorts of gadgets and gizmos. In fact, it's the gadgets and gizmos that don't interest me. Now, the people around the world who use them to do cool things, that does interest me. Oh, and I also like bagpipes. Anyway, maybe all of that will interest you, too. Check out the World's Technology Podcast, brought to you by the BBC, Public Radio International, and WGBH Radio in Boston. Find out more at theworld.org/technology.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Lisa. Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Visit Lisa.com to learn more. That's LEESA.com.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capella University. With Capella's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
I'm Miles Parks. I cover voting and election security for NPR. Across the NPR network, we report rigorously on the forces seeking to disrupt democracy and provide communities with reliable information. It's Public Media Giving Days, the perfect time to stand with the facts by donating now at donate.npr.org. Thank you.